This weekend starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
The season of returns. I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Kashenka. Merry Christmas weekend. Happy Hanukkah. Here's what's coming up this hour.
The Christmas and Hanukkah weekend means plenty of gift giving. In the days after, it means some presents are going back. We'll have some strategy to keep in mind.
Ways to be less wasteful, too, around the holidays.
The church in England that's trying to get more people in the pews by hosting events like a beer festival.
And can artificial intelligence spare you from regretful things you might email or say to someone?
Because it's listening all the time, it can compare what you're saying to its increasingly large database of stuff that's out there, both actual facts and mistakes that other people have regretted, then it can provide you with advice on how to avoid a mistake that somebody else has made, or to point out that the story you're retelling was created by a 22-year-old who lives in his mother's basement.
Tech analyst Rob Enderle on how artificial intelligence might interpret signals from our brains. He's here in about 25 minutes. Well, ordinarily, we associate terror attacks with things like guns or bombs, right? But these days, after incidents in Berlin, Germany, Nice, France, and at Ohio State University, the preferred choice for mass casualties has been a vehicle. How do you prepare and defend yourself when there's not a traditional weapon being used, and you're part of, say, a so-called soft target, like the sidewalk Christmas markets in Berlin? We're joined now by Dr. Joe Alton, disaster preparedness expert and author of books on survival. Joe, what do you have?
Well, you know what? Recent events have highlighted the fact that, boy, oh boy, that guns and bombs aren't even the most common way that I think the terrorists are going to fulfill their mission of making casualties out of decent citizens. You know, these truck bombings that have been that have occurred, one in Berlin, one in Nice, France, one even at Ohio State University, they appear to be a pattern that's emerging with regards to terror. And it's important for everyone to be situationally aware. And when I say that, I mean to be in a state of what I call yellow alert. And yellow alert simply means a relaxed but vigilant observation of what's happening around you. Mm. If you can do that, then you'll be able to give yourself the best chance of keeping safe.
All right, so give a for example. We're at a soft target, right? It's Christmas Day parade, for example. What should we be doing or thinking about?
Well, what you should do, if you're at a Christmas Day parade, for example, you're going to be in a crowd. Now, of course, in the center of the front and center, it would probably be the best place to get a view, but from a situationally aware standpoint, probably best to be on the fringe of the crowd. Take a look around you, see where possible avenues of escape would be. If you're in a mall, let's say, if you're in a building, obviously that would be, or in a theater, that would be looking to where the exits are. If you are outside, that would be basically keeping an eye out for avenues that you would be able to avoid. In this case, I guess, from the recent news, let's say a vehicle that decides to run off the road and ran into a pile of people. Mm.
What about the responsibility, say, of local municipalities here for events like we saw in Berlin, where there were no barriers?
Well, that's the thing. Barriers are important. There are barriers, some of them retractable barriers, that are called bollards. And these would stop vehicles from entering pedestrian areas. Now, you'll find bollards in outside of government buildings. You'll find them outside of airport terminals. But you know what? We're going to have to start expanding their use to areas that attract crowds in the middle of town. This Christmas market in Berlin obviously didn't have bollards on the curb. If so, then that truck would not have been able to go through. So this is something that I think is going to be one of the big construction projects, and it's one of the infrastructure projects that President-elect Trump can do to make us safer from terrorism.
We're speaking with Dr. Joe Alton, disaster preparedness expert, also author of a book called The Survival Medicine Handbook, the essential guide for when medical help is not on the way. Give us another example here of when we ought to be situationally aware.
I would say that what you need to do in any situation when you're in a crowd is to look around at the people around you. Now, their behavior can clue you in as to when something is not quite right. And what we're talking about is behavior that is not what you would expect in that particular situation. For example, jumping up and down and screaming would be normal activity, for example, normal behavior at a rock concert. But it wouldn't be normal behavior at Starbucks. And so, therefore, that would be what I call an anomaly. And what you need to do is observe for anomalies in your environment. And this is not something to panic over. I mean, the likelihood is very small that you're going to be involved in one of these types of events. But if we can instill a culture of situational awareness in our society, in American society, we're going to have less casualties in the events that are sure to follow in the uncertain future.
Are we seeing local law enforcement start to offer these types of things?
At present, I don't know of any specific programs that are coming up with regards to this. However, there is a lot of online information that's available. I've written about active shooters. I've written about vehicular terrorism. I've written about bombings. And you know what? There are a lot of other great sources that can give you information that will help you stay safe in times of trouble.
It's Dr. Joe Alton, disaster preparedness expert and author of books on survival. 13 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for being with us on this Christmas and Hanukkah weekend. Are you feeling the stress of the holiday season? Well, join the crowd, right? But with some clever techniques, it doesn't have to be this way. We're joined now by Robin Silverman, author of Feathers, 50 Things You Can Do in 50 Seconds or Less to Lighten Up and Set Yourself Free. She's got some little things you can do to quickly de-stress and release positive energy. Robin, like what?
So what we're going to share are what are called holistic principles, okay? So F-U-L-L, kind of like holistic, but the word full. And we're going to be talking about how to use energy in multiple dimensions to really get things going your way. So, for instance, if you want to lighten up, one of the easiest things you can do, let's just say you don't want to go to a holiday party, your relatives are going to be there, they're going to be arguing about the election, blah, 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 blah. All right. So one of the things that you can do before you go is open the book at random and read one of the feathers. It takes less than 50 seconds. Now, what happens is, by doing that, it's like dangling keys in front of a crying baby. You're going to take your attention off the thing that's bothering you. You're just going to distract yourself. You're going to pull it away. And when you do that, you're going to feel two things. Number one is immediate physical relief. You're going to feel better right away. And then the other thing is you're going to open up your biofield or your energy field. And what I call a little mini miracle is likely to result.
All right, I'm listening. Can you give me an example of one?
Yeah, sure. So a mini miracle be that your best friend calls and gives you a really great excuse not to go to the party.
Right.
Something like that. Or let's say you're going to go holiday shopping and you're just dreading the parking lot because you know you're not going to get a space.
Yeah.
So again, you're driving around, all you see are the filled up spaces, right? You're putting your attention on the filled up spaces. The idea is that, again, you can take a feather before you go, okay? Pull it out of the book before you go, just to get yourself in that nice, light state of mind. But when you get there, start paying attention to all the people who are leaving. Okay, who's leaving? And you see people backing out all over the place. Okay, and then there's your spot. So you just get used to expecting that the energy is going to open up in front of you. And if that's too hard because you're still, you know, all worked up, turn on your radio, okay, and in the car, and start humming a Christmas tune, and I guarantee you within 60 seconds the spot will open up.
Very good. So what exactly are these feathers that you reference in the book?
They're actually just little mini essays. The book itself, it's not a book you read from cover to cover. There's okay. No table of contents. You use it intuitively. So you basically say, which feather will help me lighten up right now? You open the book at random. It's designed to be thrown in a purse or a backpack. It's really small. And again, there's nothing magical about the essays except that they work with the principles of quantum physics. In other words, whatever you observe gets larger, so they tend to make you observe things that feel better. They work with energetics, which is the energy coming off you. That's why some people, you just can be around them and they just make you feel tired.
Yeah.
And other people make you feel up. You know how that feels?
Yep.
So it's kind of like that. So again, it makes you a pleasure to be around and makes you more attractive to the people who are more like that. And then the third thing is that it opens up your intuition in a very, very nice way. And Connect gets you out of your head and into your heart.
Interesting. We're speaking with Robin Silverman. She's author of a book called Feathers, 50 Things You Can Do in 50 Seconds or Less to Lighten Up and Set Yourself Free. And we're sort of attaching this these days to the stress of the holiday season. What else to keep in mind here? Give us another tip for managing this.
Yeah, okay. So, again, let's just pick another one. Say your budget is draining and you're starting to get worried about money. One of the things you could do, here's a feather from the book, you just sit down and smile. Now, again, if your listeners are doing it right now, go ahead and put a smile on your face, and what you'll find is that it's biologically impossible to feel bad when you're smiling. So what happens is that, again, you're sort of tuning up your whole instrument. Chances are good you'll find some money in a pocket, or you'll get a check you weren't expecting, or, you know, your boss will tell you about a new assignment that's going to give you – you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
In other words, a little mini miracle comes through. And everybody who's listening right now has had these experiences, you know, where when you're not pushing against the thing you don't want and you can get into that more open state, what happens is that life sort of works out for you.
All right. So you use the term miracle. It sounds like, in a way, you're creating your own luck.
Yes, that's, if you want to put it in those terms, that's perfect. Yeah, you absolutely, in a sense, are creating, you're not just creating, it's not luck that you're creating, it's life.
Okay,
it really is, it's really a life. Here's another easy one. This is really easy. When you're driving tomorrow, pay attention to all the safe drivers. And then, you know, you can say this out loud, go, oh, hello, red Toyota, I like your following distance. Oh, hello, black Jeep, look at how you use that turn signal, okay? You will undoubtedly find that all of a sudden the traffic in front of you disappears, and now all of a sudden you can get to your destination faster.
I think I'd prefer a method like I Dream of Jeannie. You know, you fold your head or fold your arms and wink your eyes, snap your head down, make all that traffic go away. It's Robin Silverman. The book is called Feathers, 50 Things You Can Do in 50 Seconds or Less to Lighten Up and Set Yourself Free. Glad you're with us. Forget the season of giving. 'Tis the season of returns, right? That could really perhaps hurt your bottom line, too. The hyper-busy gift return period, typically the week after Christmas, is second only to Black Friday for foot traffic. It's also a taboo topic, right? Because talking about gift returns means we kind of have to admit that some of our presents missed the mark. Here's some guidance on returns from this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka.
Now that you got it, are you ready to give it back? 'Tis the week for gift returns. Joining us to talk about the right way to return an unwanted gift is consumer advocate Christopher Elliott. Christopher, I assume if you have a gift receipt, it's pretty straightforward, but what if you don't have one?
You're right. It is pretty straightforward. You just go to the business and you say, I have a gift receipt, and return the gift. You know, the best way of preventing a problem with gift returns, of course, is to not have a gift that you return. You know, basically, make sure that you're giving a gift that someone wants, and then if you happen to get a gift that you don't like, the first option is to re-gift it so that you don't have to deal with a business. This is especially true if you're dealing with a situation where you maybe don't have a receipt. So you re-gift it, and then you avoid having to go back and do any kind of negotiating.
Should you ask the giver for a gift receipt or some kind of, not a gift receipt, but the receipt for the product?
Yeah, you know, and I talked to some etiquette experts, and they say that it's absolutely fine to ask if there is a gift receipt, and sometimes one can be generated even after a gift is given. And you don't have to be, you know, in their face about it and say, I don't like your present. You can say, maybe I wanted to get a different color or a different model. But asking for a gift receipt is never a bad thing. It's just, I guess, in how you approach it.
Can you return something to a physical store that was delivered by mail?
Well, one of the things I discovered, actually, is that there is this option that a lot of online merchants that have an offline bricks-and-mortar presence will allow you to return something that you received online to a regular store. So, for example, a Sears or JCPenney, if you get it online, sometimes they'll let you return to the store. That can be more convenient than having to mail it back and all that.
We're speaking with Christopher Elliott, a consumer advocate, about returning gifts this week. What are restocking fees? Is this something new?
They're not new, but they are getting worse. I talked to someone who tracks restocking fees, and Some businesses actually have a 100% restocking fee. These are fees that are used to recover the cost, presumably, of putting the item back on the shelf. And what they really are is they're a deterrent to returning a gift, and they're a way of the business just to make a little extra money off of your return. So, you know, both very bad things for consumers.
So they can get away with exorbitant fees, can't they?
They can, yeah. It's not uncommon to find, and these are usually on electronics, but some high-value items like jewelry as well, not uncommon to find 10, 20, 25% restocking fees. That's definitely something that you want to ask about. Otherwise, you could lose a significant value of your gift.
Christopher, are there retailers that actually won't take something back?
Yes, there always are retailers. They aren't really the big retailers. If you stick to the big brand names, they will almost always have some kind of a return policy. But if you're dealing with, say, a small business, look for that little sign that says no returns. If you see that, you know, you might want to think twice before buying something for a loved one or even returning a gift that you maybe don't want.
And on the more generous side, are there some retailers that are pretty good about taking back anything regardless of whether it was opened or not?
Yeah, I have some personal experience with this because I have young kids and they like to get things from Amazon. Amazon really does a wonderful job. They will take things back even in some cases when after the return period has expired, and they often don't even ask questions like what do you want to return this for? They'll just take it back, no questions asked. So I really, if there is one company to be held up over all the others when it comes to return policies, it would be Amazon.
This weekend's Jennifer Koschenka with consumer advocate Christopher Elliott. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Looking for the next place to grow or expand your business? Why not look to a state that's one of America's top 10 for business, where 2,000 burdensome regulations were eliminated over the past 5 years and is now home to the sixth best entrepreneurial climate. All this and more awaits you in the state of Michigan, the state that should be the number one choice for your business. Go to MichiganBusiness.org to learn more. Again, that's MichiganBusiness.org to learn more.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Well, what if artificial intelligence could end all the arguments with family and friends during the holidays? There's a growing possibility that AI could detect when something bad was about to come out of your mouth. Here's Rob Enderle, principal of the tech advisory firm The Enderle Group. Rob, how would it work?
Well, it would work in a number of ways. One is it would clearly monitor everything you did all the time, and then feed that into the AI engine, which would look for first obvious mistakes and then for not so obvious mistakes. And now we're talking about response times in milliseconds by these things, so gives it a pretty good chance of popping up and saying something else. And by the way, it can also listen to what other people are saying and point out that some of what they're saying may be inaccurate or stupid, which could allow you to prevail more easily in an argument, which might actually be more fun than the other part during the holidays. Mm. But in any case, because it's listening all the time, it can compare what you're saying to its increasingly large database of stuff that's out there, both actual facts and mistakes that other people have regretted. Then it can provide you with advice on how to avoid a mistake that somebody else has made, or to point out that the story you're retelling was created by a 22-year-old who lives in his mother's basement.
Does that make us essentially robots?
Well, it enhances us. I mean, right now we've got a GAO report out that says we're all going to be replaced by robots, and part of the reason for that is we can't keep up. This would enhance our capability and make us better, more successful people, and probably is a better way, at least from the standpoint of the race, to apply the technology than to replace it, because I don't know about you, I'm not looking forward to being unemployed. So having a focus on making me more productive, more effective, more successful, as opposed to replacing me, I think is a far better path to be on, given the fact I don't want to be replaced.
Mm. We're speaking with tech analyst Rob Enderle. He's written a piece called How AI Could End Stupid Holiday Arguments, almost like a brain filter that would alert you if you were about to say or do something stupid. I'm just thinking out loud here in terms of sports applications, and if something like this would work for my New York Jets, especially quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick, to train him to throw to players who are on his team.
That would be nice. We probably need some kind of guidance system on the football itself.
Oh, right.
But certainly it could flash that a play that's being pitched would be inappropriate for the field the way it's laid out, or given how the quarterback is currently performing, perhaps a pass would be a bad idea because the quarterback is unsettled. So it could provide a quick flag warning from the coach to the quarterback saying, you know, right now you shouldn't be tossing the ball up because you're still shook up because you were just whopped.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe you should call a running play until your head settled down and prevent a lot of the, I think, obvious play failures, interceptions in particular, that happen on the field.
What's the reality of this, though? Or maybe how far away is it if we were to start experimenting?
Oh, we should have something in place within a couple of years. The capability is there now. We have the speed. We just have to create the databases and the deep learning systems apply them to this problem. But remember, we've got intelligent machines now providing medical advice, providing legal advice. There a lot of the defense systems have now converted over to some level of intelligence. So the speed in which we can take an idea like this and apply it is unprecedentedly fast. So I would expect we'll have something commercial certainly by the end of the decade, and probably have some folks messing around with it within 18 months.
Jeez, that would it hamper creativity?
Not necessarily. It really depends on how it's applied. So in fact, it could enhance creativity. A lot of creative people have 10 ideas, 8 of which are bad, and so they spend a lot of time wasted on the 8 that just are not even remotely viable. An AI could point them to the 2 things that have the highest probability of success and keep them a bit focused.
Thanks, Rob. Tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal of the firm The Enderle Group. It's 21 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend. Not to put a downer on your holiday celebrations, this is the time of the year when we're most wasteful. Between Thanksgiving and New Year's Day, waste increases enormously compared with the rest of the year in the U.S. Those stats are from the California Department of Resources Recycling and Recovery. They say about a 25% bump in waste. How can we be less wasteful? Here's MarketWatch reporter Maria LaMagna. Maria, set this up.
I was pretty surprised by some of these statistics, but, we already know waste is a huge problem in the U.S., and between Thanksgiving and New Year's Day, we increased the amount of waste by 25%, which is 1 million extra tons of junk compared with the rest of the year in the U.S., and that includes 38,000 miles of ribbon, which would be enough to tie a bow around the entire earth, and almost $300 million worth of uneaten food. Actually, that was just that uneaten food stat was just turkey. So, I mean, we are throwing away tons and tons of stuff during the holiday season.
Holy smoke. All right, what else are we wasting this time of year?
A lot of what I found in this article is, it's things like wrapping paper, even the Christmas trees themselves. The bulk of it is actually food, so that is interesting. People are making these huge holiday meals and throwing a lot of them away. So it's a mix of the stuff you would think of, which is wrapping paper and decorations kind of stuff, but really a lot of it is food.
Wow. All right, so what can we do to balance this or stop it altogether?
Yeah, that is one thing. Obviously, we're known for, it's the time of excess, kind of, so it's kind of a habit of many people to really go all out for the holiday season, but some careful planning can cut back on that a little bit. Actually think about who's coming to your house for dinner, how much each person's going to eat, instead of just thinking about making as much as possible, doing a little bit more planning in advance to use leftovers for future meals, automatically freezing some of what you make instead of just hoping people will pick at it over the next couple of days and then they don't. There are a couple of things that you can do. And as far as the wrapping paper waste goes, there are some types of recyclable paper. You can use just plain brown paper or white paper that isn't necessarily wrapping paper. You can buy recyclable wrapping paper. You can use things like jars and bags that you'll use in the future. So there are ways to kind of get creative and don't necessarily go to the craft store and get every single thing there. Yeah, there a little bit of creative ways to cut back on that.
We're speaking with MarketWatch personal finance writer Maria LaMagna. Her piece is called Three Ways to Be Less Wasteful Around the Holidays. All right, so what else?
Yeah, I mean, I think another sort of theme that has come out of this year is focusing on experiences and not things. You know, there's a lot of people that have been writing about minimalism. We saw Marie Kondo's book was so popular about minimalism and throwing stuff away. So I do think this is a year that people are starting to value going out and doing fun things instead of just buying stuff as gifts. So for any last-minute gifting, it's probably a good idea. You know, you can give, obviously, a gift card. You can suggest a fun activity that you could do with a friend or a family member. So that's another way of kind of cutting back on just the junk that ends up piling up in people's homes. You can go out and do something fun instead.
Thanks, Maria. MarketWatch reporter Maria LaMagna from New York. It is 14 minutes now in front of the hour. On this weekend, most everyone knows the song Winter Wonderland, but few people outside of Honesdale, Pennsylvania know the story or man behind it. That sent Wall Street Journal columnist Claire Ansberry to this small town in the northeast part of the state. Claire, what did you find?
Well, I found that, you know, there's a lot of Christmas carols that everybody knows, but we often don't know the story or the people behind them. And that was the case in the Winter Wonderland. It was written by a young man who he was in his 30s when he wrote it. And he wrote it while he was being treated for tuberculosis in a sanitarium. Looking out his window, seeing the kids play, it reminded him of his childhood home where they lived across the street from Central Park in a little town called Honesdale, which is in the northeastern corner of the state by the Poconos Mountain. It was published in 1934, and he died the following year in 1935, just a day before he turned 34. So it's sad. He always wanted to be a songwriter, and he did live long enough to hear Guy Lombardo play his song, but never lived long enough to see it to the top of the chart. Yeah, I think he at least knew that it was a hit. And, you know, a lot of the carols that we know today, the classics, were written in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. And, you know, that was just coming out of the Depression, you know, the wars. And I don't, you know, I think that inspired a lot of people, gave them some hope. And, you know, it just saw a lot of these carols being written.
Yeah. And this was no accident. I mean, he was a writer slash poet, right?
Right. You know, as a kid, he was also a musician. As a kid, he played the piano, and he joined, the town had a local boys band. It wasn't affiliated with the school or anything. It was just a bunch of guys who liked to play music. Mm. And he also wrote a lot. He was very clever with lyrics. He would write poems for his classmates and radio jingles. So he had that bent of putting words together and being very clever with words, but also loving music.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal columnist Claire Ansberry. Her piece is called The Origins of a Christmas Carol, The Real Wonderland, and the story behind the guy who wrote it, Richard Smith. So I know that one kind of made him famous. Did he write any other songs or poems or jingles that we know?
There were about 10 songs that he wrote and were published. You know, none of them are as well known as Winter Wonderland. He did, while he was being treated in the sanitarium, he entered these contests for jingles, and one of them was Maybelline Eyeshadow, and you know, I think a lot of people remember it. It was called The Eyes Have It. So he was clever, and he did have about 10 other songs to his name and to his credit.
Whether his treatment for TB was good or not, just a place with the name called The Sanitarium does not sound like a fun place to be.
No. Man. And at that time,
especially in the
30s,
there wasn't, right?
There wasn't a lot of, you know, treatment.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I, you know, I think he was depressed. You know, he was, you know, in his 30s.
Yep.
He wanted to be a songwriter, and there wasn't a lot of hope. He was released. The doctors thought that the disease had been arrested, but he did die a year later.
Remarkable what it says about him, that he's able to turn out something that lived and is associated with so much happiness.
Exactly.
At a time when he was probably in a really bad place, physically and mentally,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think it gave him some hope, too, you
sure.
know, that he did see it as a hit. So that was great.
It's quite the story. Wall Street Journal columnist Claire Ansberry. It is remarkable, right? Here is this place in some sanitarium, which can't be good at all, in northeast Pennsylvania. Essentially, he's dying, right? He's got TB. Yet he cranks out a song like Winter Wonderland, and it lasts forever and creates happiness at a time when he was in a really dark place. Mr. Smith, by the way, is buried in the local cemetery, his grave marked by two stones, as Claire writes. The older stone is plain and bears only his name and the years he was born and died. But a few years ago, a local man, thinking more should be done, bought and installed another marker with a snowman, Mr. Smith's name, and the words, Winter Wonderland. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for being with us. How about a beer festival to get you to reconsider going to church? The Church of England has dealt with dwindling attendance for decades. In the 10 years up to last year, attendance has fallen by 10 to 15%. Another stat, about 960,000 people, or less than 2% of the roughly 55 million people living in England, attend weekly services. But the Wall Street Journal says with events like the Land of Hops and Glory Beer Festival, the Reverend Stuart Craddock from St. Wolfram's Church in Grantham, England, and other Anglican modernizers are trying to make their churches hubs of increasingly secular communities. On the last Sunday in November, they served beer with names like Black Mass and Black Jesus, both dark ales. There was also a fruitier beer called Absolution. If you like it bitter, there was Salvation on tap. During the three-day beer festival, an estimated 2,000 people soaked the bricks with beer fumes. Father Craddock, by the way, intends to put on another beer festival next year. Also in the works for the Isles are an 80s night dance party, a toboggan run, and a skate park. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.